How do you build over $600,000 a year in net cash flow in less than 6 years? Today, we have Shantanu, and this is exactly how he did it.
The Cash Flow for Life podcast is about one thing: using real estate as a tool to create consistent cash flow every single month for the rest of your life. Our guests are everyday people who are making it happen. Let's get into it.
So Shantanu, let's start with kind of the beginning.
Sure.
Briefly, what was your background before you got into real estate?
I was a technology professional.
Okay.
So Andrew, I did my MBA and a MHA from St. Louis in America. I came to America 12 years ago.
Okay.
I came as a, you know, on a student visa.
Okay.
I think I was 10 years late. Obviously I come from India. I have an Indian heritage. I think I was late in America by at least 10 years. Typically, a person would come as a student at the age of 17, 18. I came at 27.
You came at 27.
Correct.
So you come to America and you wanted to be in technology.
Yes.
Right? So at the time, obviously, like most Indian immigrants, like a lot of them, especially either technology or doctors, you came here with a job. I mean, to get a job, obviously.
I came here to pursue my American dream.
Right, which is get education and then get a good job.
Correct.
Okay. And you had a fairly decent job.
Yes. The last job I had was paying me pretty well.
Pretty well. Okay, good. So then why would you want to get into real estate? Was this like, I'm going to go into real estate full-time, or did you start kind of part-time and then make the transition?
So I started in 2018.
Okay.
Obviously, as a side, I had a W-2 job.
Okay.
I got married 6 months before that.
Okay.
So I did something what I call as house hacking. So I did my first house hack in Elmwood Park, Illinois. Bought a 4-unit, lived in one, rented out 3, and then added a 5th unit.
Okay. So basically this is suburbs of Chicago that
Correct.
People may not be familiar. And this is would be a suburb, nice suburb of Chicago.
Yes.
And you bought a 4-unit as a house hack. So you got a loan 3.5% down. You buy the property, you add a 5th unit to it,
Correct.
Increase the value,
Correct.
Meaning not because you wanted to sell it, because it just increased your cash flow.
Correct.
Okay. And so in this podcast, we're going to talk about kind of scaling.
Sure.
Right? In a short amount of time, how do you go literally from zero to 50,000 in cash flow, net cash flow we're talking about, not gross, right?
Sure.
And so the first was a house hack.
Correct.
Now, at that time, you didn't have any very sophisticated techniques.
Not at all.
Right? Okay. So you get the idea of doing a house hack. And then what did you do for property number two?
So the second property was a BRRRR. That was exactly what, 257 model that you teach to all of us in Mastery.
So what, for people who may not be familiar with 257, what is that?
That's a secret.
Okay.
It's 2 years. In 2 years, how do you buy 5 properties and get them all paid off in 7?
Okay. So 2 years, 5 properties, get them all paid off in 7.
Correct.
Now, what you're doing, you're just doing basically that same exact thing, just at a hyperdrive, right?
Yes.
Just at a lot more accelerated pace.
Correct.
Okay. So let me ask you this, right? A lot of people are they have some sort of a job, they have some sort of a profession. You were making good money, right? Your wife was working also.
She's still working.
She's still working, right?
Sure.
So what was the drive that, hey, I'm going to do real estate and then I'm going to scale up? Where does that drive come from?
Obviously, my immigrant, background.
Okay.
When I came to America, I was always, under the insecurity that, hey, I'm 10 years late. So now I have to be hyper-focused on everything I do. I believe that, how you do something in life is how you do everything, right? So I think it comes from hard work, dedication. I do not give up. Giving up is not in my blood.
Right. No,
right?
Giving up is not. I mean, I think one of the biggest strengths you have is that giving up is not in your vocabulary.
Correct.
Right. And so you'll just go at it over and over and over, whatever it takes. And even if you're uncomfortable, you'll still keep doing it.
Correct.
Right. So was this the Shantanu that I know today? Right. Was this always this way, even in high school, even earlier? Or this is somewhere you adopted this type of a mindset?
I think during my journey to America, you know, this is something that I learned from, you know, because I tried each year from India, you know, from the age of 18 through 27. Hey, how do I go to America? What programs do I need to attend? What classes do I need to take? Right. So it came from hustling, 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 and hustling.
Okay. Got it. So basically, and then you come here, you start doing your basic house hacks, right?
Correct.
You, how many house hacks did you do to begin with?
So I did three house hacks.
Three house hacks.
2018, 4-unit. 2019, 4-unit. And 2020, another 4-unit.
Okay. So basically, you're like, okay, I got one thing that works, and then you kind of stuck with that particular model for
Correct.
A little bit. Okay. And then at the same time, you're going out looking at a lot of different things in terms of education, real estate, all that kind of stuff at the time. Then you end up at one of the three-day events.
Correct. I think this was October 2018. Yeah.
October 2018.
Correct.
Okay. So at that time, what I was saying was that you can build a lot of cash flow in a very short period of time, and you can have $400, $500, $600 cash flow per door,
mm-hmm.
right? Per door, not just, and you can have a ton of equity. Did that whole idea make sense to you?
At the time, no. I'll be honest. I was very skeptical, you know, because
Why?
I think owning 100, 200, 300 doors seemed like a big dream, right? I did not know that, you know, whatever you're talking about is true or not. And so it took me some time to, you know, do some research, you know, follow certain people, get to talk to them, and then join Mastery.
Got it. So now you had gone to a lot of other things, right?
Sure.
Because you're just that type of person. What do you think separates what we do versus there's a lot of gurus in the space, right? They're talking about a lot of different things, right? And not that anything is right, wrong, indifferent, but why did you choose to come around this type of mindset of the whole idea of 2-5-7, 2 years, 5 properties, pay them off in 7 rather than fall chasing something else?
See, I think, Andrew, you as a, you know, a person, you are somebody who walks the talk and talks the walk.
Okay.
Correct? You're not just a person who's selling a program. You're a person who invests in, you know, same asset class that you teach, you know, thousands of people at the 3-day and then at the Mastery.
Okay. So basically that we were living the message and not just talking about it. That
Correct.
Made sense to you.
Correct. That made sense. And then, you know, when I could do my research that, hey, who owns this property? Is
sure.
it one of, you know, Andrew Holmes or his business partners?
Sure.
You know, so that kind of told me that, hey, yeah, these, I mean, you cannot have, you know, one or two, you know, things. These are a lot of assets.
Got it.
In a small market.
Sure. So you're investing, what markets are you investing in correctly?
Suburbs of Chicago.
Okay.
I'm a rehabber, you know, I do bigger rehab jobs. And then I'm doing new construction in Florida.
Okay. So you're doing new construction. We'll get to it here in a minute. But your business is based out of suburbs of Chicago.
Correct.
Okay. And let's kind of walk through some of your earlier deals, right?
Sure.
So when you're buying a property, what are the criteria that you're buying it on? Are you buying it based on cap rates? Are you buying it based on equity, cash flow? What are you looking for?
So there are 4 kinds of, you know, basically deals. You talked about cap rates, cash flow, and all that stuff, which is awesome. I believe a lot of real estate assets are core assets, meaning these are turnkey properties. You know, these are properties that don't need any work at all.
Got it.
Right? Then step 2 is core plus, which is properties that need just slight rent increases. Right? So then again, there is not enough, you know, meat on the bone, if you will. Right? 3rd asset class is properties that need a cosmetic rehab. Right? Properties that need some kind of work, but not much. The 4th one, which is what I specialize in, is opportunistic assets, meaning I buy properties that nobody else wants to buy. I do a full rehab. I buy properties for anywhere from 30 to 40 to 50 cents on the dollar,
okay.
Correct? And I can get all my money out and some.
Okay. So let's kind of break that down a little bit because I think for people who you're using kind of industry terminology, right? Core, core plus, so on and so forth. So basically, one is going to be a turnkey asset.
Correct.
Where you don't need to do any work.
At all.
Number 2 is going to be something that's almost turnkey.
Correct.
Maybe a coat of paint or something. Maybe throw in appliances and rent it out.
And
then you do rent increases and so on and so forth.
Correct.
Right? But you're really going down deep where you're saying, hey, I am okay buying a property which may not be in a great condition.
Correct.
But I can bring it back online by doing all the work, getting it back into fantastic condition, and then I am adding value. So it would be a significant value add. And then on the back end, not only do you get a huge appraisal, but your rents go through the roof.
Correct.
Okay. So for people, they may be thinking about when you're saying, okay, I'm buying properties at 30, 40 cents of the dollar, right? And especially when they think about Chicago, they think about two things. One is cold wind, right? And the next thing is crime,
sure.
Right? Are you buying in, so we define areas as four areas, A, B, C, and D. A being affluent, aspirational, B being bread and butter, meaning solid, good areas, C being areas with some challenges, and D being disasters.
Sure.
Right? So where would your assets lie mostly?
Mostly it's A and B.
Mostly it's
so
A and
I have
B.
A prop. So it's a good question to ask. I have tenants who pay me $4,200 a month, you know, like a River Forest six sure. flat. The highest rent is $4,200 now. And then I have tenants who pay me $800 a month
right.
in C-class suburbs. Some tenants I inherited, they were paying. I didn't change their rent. And, you know, for the last 3 years, I have still, you know, they pay on time. I don't.
But your core is basically, you would say, if you averaged out, solid B areas.
Solid A minus and B plus is my core. That's my
core.
Focus.
Okay.
Correct.
So this is something that I want you to talk about a little bit, because a lot of times what people say is, well, Andrew, you know, this person has 20 properties or 40 properties or 50 properties. Well, I have 30, 40, 50 properties in middle of St. Louis or in, you know, quote unquote, Southside Chicago.
Sure.
And why that's not the same? Because the quality of the property matters.
Mm-hmm.
The quality of the tenant matters.
Sure.
The equity matters and your cash flow matters. Can you explain that?
Sure. So basically, Andrew, you brought a good point, which is that, hey, how is an A-class property different than a B-class property, than a C-class property? Because my goal is only buy and hold. I want to hold these assets for the next 100 years. I want to pass on these assets to my daughter now, right? So I want to make sure that, you know, I buy assets in high quality areas. Tenants who do not default on rent, or the default rate is less than 2%, correct? And I don't have management problems from a long-term basis. That's how I define an asset quality.
Okay. So, you know, a lot of times people think retirement is a function of age. Retirement is not a function of age. Retirement is a function of cash flow.
Correct.
But you got to go one step further. Is what is important is predictability of cash flow.
Correct.
Right? Because there are people we know where they're like, oh yeah, I have, you know, 50 properties, 60 properties, and they're broke landlords.
Sure.
Right? Because why? Because they have properties in poor quality areas with poor quality pool of tenants, right? And so challenging areas with challenging tenants that always have challenges means you're going to have a challenge collecting your rent.
Correct.
Right? And that is something that it becomes very critical to understand, that the property Shantanu is talking about are good quality, stable areas, stable tenants, where you have rent growth, where you have property growth. Because in Chicago, we don't see kind of the explosive escalation of pricing. Right?
Correct.
Like you may see in California, you may see in Vegas, you may see in Miami. That's not the Chicago market.
Correct. Chicago is a very blue city, you
right.
know, blue city, not only in terms of, you know, the politics, but blue city in terms of, you know, there's a big blue collar, you know,
population.
Tenant population. And I think, you know, the laws are not, you know, landlord friendly.
So let's kind of go there. Right. Because a lot of times we hear this all the time. Right.
Sure.
If people have listened to any of the national, you know, thing, oh, my God, I'm going to only invest in states that are very, you know, and generally they're going to be Republican states.
Texas.
Right. The Texas of the world. The
Florida.
The Florida, the Arizona, the Indiana's, the, you know, generally more conservative
sure.
states. Right. In Chicago, everything is opposite.
Correct.
But it is a phenomenally cash-rich city.
Sure.
Right? Where it will take, if you don't do things by the book, it may take you 4 months on the low side,
mm-hmm.
6 months to a year to evict a tenant. Right?
Correct.
In Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
It may, the laws are more liberal and they're not as landlord friendly.
Correct.
But it's very, very lucrative.
Correct.
Explain that.
So you know, a lot of people don't know about it. In America, if you look at numbers, the largest Section 8, you know, kind of body in America, not just in the Midwest, is Chicago Housing Authority.
Right.
Right? They have millions and millions of dollars, you know, so that is one strategy. Second strategy is when a tenant doesn't pay, you kind of work with them proactively, offer them cash for fees so that you don't have to go through a 6 months or a 4 month long eviction process, correct? Collectively, what happens is people who are based in either East Coast or West Coast, they fear that, hey, the tenant laws are very friendly, correct? The municipalities are difficult to work with, right? And then they are not able to leverage the cash flow, you know, kind of thing that we have in Chicago.
So the biggest issue is this, like when you take a place like Chicago, and when we talk about Chicago, we're talking about Chicagoland.
Correct.
Which is a population in the metro area of about 9 million, give or take. Right. And so it's Chicago is the city of Chicago, which is about 1.5 million. And then you have rest of the Chicagoland area.
Correct.
Right. Which is much greater than Chicago.
Correct.
And the unique thing about being in a market like Chicago, like if I take, say, Houston, Dallas, Nashville, lots of parts of Florida, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, what happens is the hedge funds went there. Why? Because it's very friendly to them. So you're not, they're competing with you based on money. And you're not going to outspend a big, large hedge fund that has billions and billions of coffers. In a place like Chicago, you can be a much more strategic. And if you know how to work the system and you know how to buy properties, you have no competition.
Correct.
Right? Which a lot of times people don't understand. Generically, they're like, oh, my God, it's yes, the landlord laws are tougher. But guess what is very high? The amount of equity is very high. The amount of cash flow
correct
is because nationally, and you, I know you can stay on top of all of this, generally whenever people are buying properties for cash flow, what is the type of cash flow on an average they have around the United States?
$100.
That's actually very high.
Correct. And I'm talking about single family homes.
Single family homes.
If you look at multifamily, which is apartment buildings, you know, people don't make more than 25, 30, 50 bucks
per door. Correct. And that's like phenomenal making 25, 30 bucks because they're looking at the yield increases in terms of how can I increase better my management? How can I basically make a better NOI so I can increase the value?
Correct.
Right. Whereas in Chicago, when we look at numbers, and we're talking about good suburbs, we're not talking about in a D area where you have to have a high cap rate. Right. We're talking about good quality suburbs where you and I live.
Sure.
Right. In those areas, what are the cash flows you're talking about on an average?
So long-term rental cash flow is a minimum $600.
For you, it's $600.
Correct.
Minimum.
At the long-term, you know, a kind of rental. Right. I started doing midterm rentals and short-term rentals. I have close to 10 now, which is, you know, online. So the cash flow is much higher for STRs and MTRs.
And MTRs. So for MTRs and STRs, short-term rentals and midterm rentals. But for a long-term rental, and long-term rental, the way we consider it generally is 2 years or more. Obviously, a one-year lease is considered a long-term rental, but the way we look at it, is that how you look at it also, is 2 years or more generally?
Correct. I mean, usually I have some tenants who have been staying for the last 6 years.
Right.
Correct. So I prefer a tenant doesn't move.
Right.
You know, so that I have, you know, rental less stability. Vacancy. Correct.
Rental stability. Right. So, but your cash flow per property, when I average it out, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously some are going to be a little bit less, some are going to be a little bit more, is somewhere around about $600 is what?
$600 to $700, yes.
$600 to $700. So the basic criteria we use within Mastery, right, is a minimum $450 net. And now, mind you, somebody's going to listen to this, like, but Andrew, but, you know, Shantanu, you bought the properties in 2019, 20, 21, 22. How about in 23 and 24?
Same thing. Andrew, I've always been good at acquisitions. So I always go full force in acquisitions.
Okay.
Right.
So I want to kind of go there with it now, right? That when you started in 2019,
mm-hmm.
right, compared to today,
sure,
right, the market was different than it is today. Like in 18, 19, now looking back, every property you should have bought.
I should have bought.
Right, every property. I should have bought every property. We didn't because you don't know the future. Looking back, it's easy to say, oh, I should have done this. But where did you start finding properties when you started?
Mm-hmm.
And where are you finding properties today? Because that's one of the biggest things that I hear all the time. Andrew, oh, it works for you. Oh, it works for Sean. Oh, it works for that guy. You know, I can't find properties. Where did you start at that time, mm-hmm. and where are you finding properties today?
So when I started, it was MLS, because that's kind of the holy grail of, you know, you buying any property in America, right? Then I realized that, you know, 2018, 19, 20, 21, market shifted, and market is still shifting. That's where I focused on off market. Now, when I say off market, I'm talking about door knocking. I'm talking about cold calling. I'm talking about targeting expired MLS listings, canceled listings, and going and talking to sellers directly.
Okay. So, and I'm going to say this for people who don't know this, they don't know you, they may not know me. But I'm going to say this. I mean, you're cheap, right? You're as tight as they come.
Sure.
Right? And I mean, we laugh about it all the time, but a lot of times you're finding a lot of deals and people think you have to spend a lot of money to find great deals.
Sure.
You don't spend a dime.
I spend less than most people. Yes.
Less than most. Okay. So you're not necessarily doing mailings. You may have done some, but you're not necessarily doing a lot of mailings. You're not doing big TV ads. You're not spending a lot of money in general to find these properties.
Correct.
Are you doing a lot of this hustling?
Yes, mostly it's me. This year, I'm building up a team of virtual assistants,
sure.
to cold call motivated sellers.
Okay.
You know, so it's a very target. I'm not starting a wholesaling business because that's not my focus. I want to be laser focused in what I do. I just want to target motivated landlords that have problem tenants, landlords that are pretty, you know, close to retirement, so that I can buy their properties at, you know, at a discount.
Okay. So let's make that transition,
sure.
right? Because a lot of times today, you talk about buying 6-unit, 8-unit, 12-unit buildings, right?
Correct.
But your base, what people don't understand, so a lot of times what happens is people will look at a great basketball player, great baseball player, great, doesn't matter what sport or what, a great musician, they're like, oh my God, I want to do what he's doing. But, you know, to fly a 777, mm-hmm. you start with what? You start with a little trainer airplane, right? The person, today, that person can do certain things. But guess what? That's not where they started. They built up the stamina. They built up a skill set. Now, you can kind of fasten that learning curve, but you have to start with the basics. A lot of times, Shantaro, and this is something that is important, a lot of times people will hear someone like Grant Cardone. They
sure.
talk about, oh man, it's stupid, dude. Nobody should buy a building less than 32 units, right? It's dumb. Why would you do that? That's bullshit. Who saves money? Oh, stupid people save money. What is your opinion? I mean, and you're laughing about it, but this is, I mean, I would listen to this kind of nonsense at one time in my life,
sure.
and I would believe this shit, right? I literally would believe this shit because, oh yeah, Grant Cardone said this, so it's got to be true. He's supposedly supposedly a billionaire. Now he's the 15 billion, whatever the crazy numbers he throws out. But when we're naive, when we're young, we believe these things.
Sure.
Why is that dangerous?
Very dangerous because a lot of things go into, you know, being what Grant Cardone is. Not
sure.
everybody can be, you know, Grant
right.
Cardone, correct? What I am good at is probably, you know, something that only I know and I can control. So I try to now be in my lane. Right. If I am not a speaker, I should not be, you know, basically trying to replicate what Grant Cardone is.
So if somebody wants to build up and do kind of, you know, forget about the scale of buying 200 units at a time, and that's a different scale. Right. But somebody says, hey, man, you know, it's exciting. Like you bought a property, $600,000
Correct.
Then you did Indriver Forest. Right.
Correct.
And then you did another, what, $300,000 in rehab on that property?
No, close to 500.
500,000.
Correct.
Right? So you bought it for about 600 some. You did about
500
in rehab.
Correct.
And then what was the back end value?
2.6.
2.6
million.
We just
closed the back end appraisal.
Okay. So 2.6 million.
Correct.
Right? And a lot of times people will listen to that. Like, Andrew, that's what I want to do. I'm like, listen, I understand. Right? And I want to grow taller. Right. Actually, most people are not going to get taller, but you can certainly get to that point that you can do that. But there is a process. Without doing the smaller units,
sure.
right? Meaning doing the house hack, then start building, you're cutting your teeth, rehabbing the single families, running into problems, having issues. Could you have ever pulled off this property?
No, I would not have. No. You always start small, learn from your mistakes on smaller projects so that you don't lose a lot of money. And then you try to follow the same strategy on bigger deals.
Right. So I want to kind of, and this is something, guys, really, really important if you're listening to this, please, right? Nobody's saying you can't do bigger stuff, but please start small, get yourself in a healthy position, and then scale, because even if something goes wrong, you can absorb that loss. But what a lot of times people will do is they try to make that leap. They're like, oh yeah, they take huge risks. And guess what? It goes wrong and they never end up recovering out of it, right? See, entrepreneurs, and a lot of times it's said, entrepreneurs are risk takers. Actually, entrepreneurs are the best at managing risk. It may look risky what they're doing from the outside, but they're very good at managing risk. Hence, they succeed. People who are poor at managing risk, they fail, and then they're like, oh, you know, and then they blame the market.
Sure.
Right? So I want to make a little bit of a transition, right? About 3 years ago, mm-hmm. right, we all, as a part of Mastery Elite, we went to Florida. Right?
Correct.
And at the time, we're like, hey, man, maybe we can build a lot of properties and scale.
Sure.
Right? There's a huge opportunity, mm-hmm. but the Florida market is different.
Correct.
I mean, it's just a different market compared to Chicago.
Sure.
Right? And in Florida, you started doing a lot of building,
mm-hmm.
right? You have a bunch of properties up over there mm-hmm. that you're renting out today.
Correct.
Right? Temporarily, you're holding from building more in Florida. I'm holding from building more in Florida.
Sure.
Because now looking back, what we realize is before we went to Florida, Chicago market was lucrative and in fact more lucrative than Florida. Florida market became lucrative for a short period of time.
Correct.
But today, during, and after, actually, a boring market like Chicago beats the Florida market every single time.
Agreed. I don't know if you have heard about a saying in America, grass always looks greener on the other side.
Right.
Right. That's exactly what happened 3 years ago. Now, having said that, I don't think I did a mistake. I think we all of us, you know, build a lot of houses for rentals, which I think over a period of time would appreciate in the long term. In the short to medium term, obviously, there's more supply, as we know. And there's always, you know, a certain tenant pool that you're looking for.
Because the market turned
correct.
In Florida, right?
Correct. I mean,
when 3 years, 2.5 years ago, when we went to Florida, you literally couldn't, within a 70-mile radius, right, of the Punta Gorda area, you couldn't even find a single hotel room. You couldn't find a single Airbnb.
Correct.
Right? Yet, because of the boom during Corona, everybody moving down there, there was immense amount of building, and building always runs on a 2-year backlog,
sure.
right? So suddenly, by the time Corona is kind of tapering down, all these properties are coming out of the ground. And now you have overabundance. But at the time, if you remember, Luke, a lot of people were friends with a lot of people from Mastery. They're like, man, why aren't you guys building a subdivision? Why aren't you guys building? We should build something bigger. And my point at the time was, I'm like, guys, listen, for all of us, if we build 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 houses, even if they get stuck, mm-hmm. it's okay. We can all absorb that. We can continue to own them, rent the bloody things out. It's no big deal. But if you open up a subdivision, 200, 300, 400 homes, which we could have done mm-hmm. as a group, we could have easily done that. But you realize today we would all be in a world of hurt if we had done that?
Correct. See, bigger projects come with bigger risk. Now, what differentiates naive from a pro is that, hey, the pro knows how to manage the risk on a bigger scale,
right.
correct? So what we did is we started small. We got the experience. We got some, you know, something to our name in terms of new construction in Florida. Now, if the opportunity arises in the future to build a bigger, then, you know, obviously we will, you know, we will be able to take it on.
Scale it to the next level because, I mean, every single thing we had a problem from getting basic
permits.
Concrete to permits to block to trusses to windows to I mean, all these things, right? And it's a whole just because you are good at one thing doesn't mean just something just a little bit different, right? Which is we can do a lot of projects, rehabs at a time, 10, 15, 20 rehabs at a time, not even have to show up at the rehab. But guess what? New construction is not the same. That's another different skill set, different set of different geography, different set of people, different way of working, different rules that you have to work with, different type of construction. And this becomes really, really, really important that just because you're good at one thing does not equate to translating that same thing into something very, very different. So I want to talk about the next part of it, which is the style of building that you have, meaning the way you've built your portfolio, right, of going from zero to 50,000 cash flow, right, is a little bit different than how a lot of multifamily folks do it with the syndication model.
Correct.
Right? Because, I mean, today, how many units you have total?
118. I just closed on an 8-unit building in Oak Park.
So 118 units today.
Correct.
Right? Yet, if you talk to somebody who's a multifamily operator, right, we know a lot of them. They're like, man, oh, yeah, we got 1,500, 2,000, 4,000, 8,000. The numbers that they throw out, I can't even count that far.
Sure.
Yet, I would be willing to take a bet with any one of them that I compare your net worth and I compare your cash flow, meaning for you and your family, not the whole thing, right? For you and your family, it'll be 10, if not 100 times higher than 99.9% of them.
Correct.
So can you explain what is the difference between a syndication model versus the way you're building it?
So a syndication model is basically you have a general partner who is basically the working partner. Depends on the size of deal. Typically in a 200 unit deal, you have three general partners. So each of them get a 10% share of the equity, right? And then you have the limited partners who bring capital to the deal. And they own and, you know, they have a 70% stake in the equity and the cash flow, both, right? The way the syndicators make money is that they collect an acquisition fee when they acquire a property. They collect an asset management fee when they manage the property. And then they collect a disposition fee when they sell a property. My challenge is in a syndication model, typically you have a 5-year time period. So you have to buy the property, stabilize it, get the rents up, and sell it in 5 years. My whole philosophy with real estate has been generational wealth, right? I don't want to own the property for just 5 years. I want to own it for the next 500 years, right? So that's where I think the, you know, numbers are obviously different. Somebody owning 100% of the pie versus somebody owning 10% of the pie. And then to be able to own that property for, you know, several years instead of just 5.
A lot of times people get confused in terms of the number of transactions or the number of units versus net worth and net cash flow.
Correct.
I believe the way you're doing it, it's, I think, a smarter way of doing it for 99.9% of people. Sure. Now, there is always that 1% point, 0.001% of people that can build a massive thing, right? And there's nothing wrong with that at all, right? If that's what you choose to do, 100%. But if you want to get to your net worth of 5 million, 10 million, 30 million, 50 million, small properties, then you start scaling up as small to mid-size multifamilies become available. That's the sweet spot.
Correct.
Because you're generally, and this is a general statement, generally, unless you're raising funds, unless you're doing big capital raises, you're not going to find properties that are going to be 200 and 300 and 400 units because these are generally sold by sophisticated investors to sophisticated investors.
Correct.
Right? And the multifamily game is a fee game, which is you're collecting fees every step of the go. This is a ownership, net worth, and a cash flow business.
Correct.
Would you agree with that?
200%.
So today, looking at kind of what you've accomplished, right?
Sure.
What would you suggest to somebody that is in 2024, mid-2024 is where we're recording this, and they're like, Andrew or Shantanu, is this really possible for me? Can I get started today? Is this possible?
Impossible is not in my dictionary.
Okay. So so basically you're saying 100% possible.
200%. You learn before you earn. You know, that's one thing, right? So you go to different meetups, you meet different successful investors, and then you try to learn from, you know, those people.
Okay. So in terms of starting out, right? Where should somebody start looking for properties when they're brand new?
I think you start with MLS because MLS gives you a lot of exposure. You know, MLS has a lot of listings. You look at properties that have not been sold for the last 6 months. You try to call the agent, offer them dual commission, and try to, you know, get properties that way.
Okay. So you're basically, by dual commission, you mean you're calling the listing agent directly.
Correct.
You're saying, hey, man, can I work with you? Hey, can I work with you? And you keep both sides of the commission. I mean, you're an agent now.
Correct.
But you're basically saying, hey, can I make it enticing for you so you make a little bit more money, but I really want the property at the right number? Because
sure.
That's really what is important.
Sure.
Right? So here's the thing. You go from doing smaller deals, mm-hmm. right, that are basically house hacks, to more single families, then 2 units, 4 units, so on and so forth. You're buying a mix of them. It's not like you're just buying multis. You're buying a mix. If it's a good deal, makes cash flow, has a lot of equity, you're buying. Correct?
Correct.
Okay.
See, for me, it's not single family versus multifamily. For me, it's how cheap can I buy a property? What is the asset worth at the back end? Whether it's, you know, any kind of asset class, what is it worth? Is it worth 1 million, 2 million, 3 million? And what is the price I can pay for it today?
Right. So as long as you get exceptionally good deals, you're buying. That's really what you're looking for.
Correct.
Okay. So the question is this. Initially, you had saved up some money, right? I've always said this. You're the tightest guy with money I know, right? I mean, you're not the type of person who's going to go spend money.
Sure.
Right? I mean, he's being polite about that, right? I mean, I don't know if it's in the Indian blood or whatever it is, but you're an exception. I mean, you're certainly on the extreme of that. But so you've used your money very prudently
sure.
to grow, okay? But to buy these properties, man, even on the front end, right, not only do you need some private money, maybe hard money, combine that, how are you recycling the money and creating additional money from equity? Can you take one deal and maybe walk me through it?
Sure. So I bought my first BRRRR strategy with using the 257 model. I bought it for 95. I put 15,000 into it. Now,
rehab.
This was correct. This did not need a lot of work. This was an MLS deal. You know, nobody looked at it for 4 months. I offered dual agency to the agent. You know, this one appraised for 200,000.
200,000. So you were in it for 90 plus 15.
Which is 110.
110.
And then it appraised for 200,000. So what I did was, when I did a refinance on the property, I basically got 150 back. So I put 40,000 from one property, from my first project, and I used that as down payment for my next multifamily deal. So I recycled money, and that's the very reason. I still do single family homes. I'm very passionate about, you know, single family homes. And now for the last 1 year, I've been buying properties in better suburbs where I can convert them into a furnished rental and then, you know, have—
increased cash flow.
Increased cash flow. Correct.
So, I mean, and the same thing, the multi-unit property we were talking about, the big property you bought, it's exact same thing. Bought for 650,000, 680,000, rehab for 500,000. So all in 1.1, 1.2 million. Back-end value, 2.5, 2.6. Now you can, and this is what separates people that did 2005, 6, 7, meaning the house of cards they built. See, at that time, what they had done was they would artificially fake an appraisal. They would artificially not do anything to the property and fake the value on the back end. Or they would refinance a whole lot of money out of it and go, oh, I'm going on vacation. Oh, I'm buying a Lambo. I'm buying stupid properties with no equities. Where what he's doing is, if he's cashing out $600,000, $800,000 out of this property, now instead of going spending it on stupid things, he's going buying equity on top of equity on top of equity. And every property builds cash flow on top of cash flow. On top of cash flow. Would that be correct?
Yeah, it's a lot of work, Andrew. I mean, you explained it in a good detail. It's a lot of work.
Right.
I hustle 24/7.
Right.
You know, there are days when I hardly get 4 hours of sleep.
Right.
So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of, you know, focus.
But this is your passion because you don't have... that's just what it is.
Correct.
Right? I mean, to you, this is not work, clearly.
This is my life.
Right.
You know, I just did not fell into real estate. Real estate is in me.
So, you know, some people will say, you know, I got into real estate. The difference is real estate is in him, right? And these are two different things. Sometimes people get into something and it's like Michael Jordan doesn't play basketball. Basketball is in Michael Jordan, right? And there's a big difference when you meet people that are that passionate, and doesn't matter if it's music, if it's if it's some sort of sport, if it's some sort of anything else about a profession, people who are extremely passionate about what they do, they spend their life and their soul and doing it. And the reason is more than money. They may say, oh my God, I started out broke and blah, blah, I want to make money, but it gets in them. And this is who they are. This is what they do. Right. So this whole thing about, oh, balance and this and that, guys, listen, find somebody who's really good at something, you will see they're out of balance. And they're out of balance because they're focused and they're passionate about what they do. So, Shantanu, today, where are you? I mean, it's been about 6 years since the day you started, flat out.
Correct.
Right? The podcast today is called 50,000, right? Mm-hmm. Basically scaling at a fast pace.
Sure.
Right? 50,000 net cash flow in 5 years. You realize that's $600,000.
Correct.
A year just from cash flow.
Correct.
You ever imagined somebody could make that kind of money?
No, I'm still at 42. So you're, I'm still short at 42. Okay. I think I kind of, I'm still short.
Okay.
But I would make it in, a good amount of time.
Okay. So maybe another year you can, that's only 8,000 short, man.
Correct. Another 9 months, yeah.
9 months. Okay. So another 9 months, right? And what would you say if you had to maybe put it in either one word or one sentence, why have you scaled up so quickly? What's been the secret?
Hard work. There is no secret to, it's hard work. It's hustle every day.
And single-minded passion.
Correct. And okay. Laser focus.
So now, because there's another school of thought, mm-hmm. which is that last 2-3 years, you've been full-time in real estate.
4 years, yeah.
4 years. Okay. So could you have done similar numbers in terms of career for you?
In my W-2 job, no.
No.
Not at all. W-2
because
job,
there was, remember at one time you asked me that question?
Yeah, 4 years ago.
Right, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? You're like, hey, man, can I go make X amount of dollars doing what I'm doing in my job?
Correct.
Right? So what was your calculation at that time?
So the calculation was if you work for somebody, you are getting paid for the hour you work, right? Now you could make a lot of money, but you're still trading your time with money, right? Now, when you're building assets, you're, not only having cash flow, equity, but for me, it's more generational wealth. It's for me that, I won't be alive after, for 40, 50 more years, but at least these assets will, help my family after I leave.
Okay. So at the time, my calculation, right, for somebody like you was, what are you going to make in terms of your wife has kept her job?
Sure.
Right. So there's stability. And this is important that there's stability in the family where some sort of income is coming in. You guys already had properties. And on top of that, if you go get a job again, right, making 200, 250, 300, nothing wrong with it. But for most people, even in that field, you're going to get capped out. Right?
Correct.
And that ceiling, most people are not going to become VPs. They're not going to become CEOs. That's just a fact of life. Right. And you're going to get capped out. The question becomes is each year, if you buy 4, 5, 6 properties, just 4, 5, 6, nothing huge, how much equity and how much cash flow are you adding
each year?
Each year. And the best part is with a job, if you make 250 a year, next year you have to go to work to make that same money over again, to make that same money over again. Whereas with real estate done correctly, right? What happens is whatever you do this year, you realize today is the poorest you ever will be.
Sure.
Because tomorrow it's more, correct. It's more and more. And each year you stack on top of it and on top of it and you keep growing.
Yes.
So Shantanu, this has been an absolute pleasure. Anybody that gets to meet you, talk to you as much as I pick on you. I think genuinely what you've done, it's a true inspiration. Right. And your hard work and your success speaks for itself.
Thanks, Andrew.
So, guys, having said that, if you hear this, Shantanu, please reach out, congratulate him, because genuinely, we have to look at people's passion. We have to look at what they do correctly. And hopefully we all can learn from it. And the whole point of this particular show, which is Cashflow for Life, is not just for you to be a passive listener, but for you to let's learn, let's grow together, and let's better our lives. And hopefully we'll leave the world when you're gone, you and I, in a better position, especially that should happen for you and your family. Please share the podcast. Please like us, love us, because that's how we get to grow. And if you know of any guests that would make for an awesome podcast, please feel free to suggest. Thanks. Talk to you soon.